I schedule everything. So if I don't have meetings, I'll schedule time with myself. I'll schedule time with my family, schedule time to go to the gym. And the other really big thing for me is I commute about an hour each way to my corporate job. And I make the best use of my time in the car. I think my car is a mobile classroom. And I think that is probably one of the biggest things has led to some of the success that I've had is how I use that time.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to 6 figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. As usual, I've got an awesome guest for you guys here today, Mr. Robert Leonard. We're going to dive into all kinds of things about the side hustle that he has going on, everything from real estate to podcasting and a lot of stuff in between that. So without further ado, our guest, Robert Leonard. Robert, awesome to have you here, man.
Ryan, thanks so much for having me.
Cool, dude. So let's set the background here before we kind of dive into exactly what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got to where you're at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my background's kind of interesting because it's not traditional in what you'll hear in a lot of podcasts. And so my background really started when I was 4 years old. I started racing motocross and I ended up racing motocross for 12 years. And so I was about 16 when I stopped and I had done pretty well and I ended up running the national circuit and ended up being number two in the world at racing motocross. And so my whole life, that's all my dad and I did. That was what I expected. So I had no inclinations of going into college or doing anything like that. I was on the track to go professional and race motocross for a living. So, but towards as I got close to 16, I started to think about, you know, maybe I need a backup plan, right? So if this doesn't work out, I need to see what else I could do. So I started to get interested in money and finance, and I learned about Warren Buffett. And so I got really, really interested in him. I started studying the stock market a lot. And from then on, I decided I wanted to go work at a hedge fund. I knew that I wanted to just study finance in college and end up going to work at a hedge fund. So that's what I wanted to do. And it ended up working out that I had a backup plan because when I was 15 or 16, I ended up stopping racing motocross. Someone very close to us passed away racing and that hit my dad really close. And so he stopped me from racing. And so I ended up having to go down this different path. And I was the first one in my family to ever go to college. And so I did my undergrad in finance and I ended up getting my MBA. And that's when I really hit my first roadblock, right? I wanted to go work at a hedge fund. That's all I had wanted for the last 8 years as I was learning. And having gone to a local state school and being the first one in my family to ever go to college, that's where I had to go to college. And I couldn't get into a job like that. I could not get into the investment world having gone to a small state school up here in New England. So that was where I was hit my first roadblock. And so I ended up going into the corporate finance route. I did that for a little bit. And then I was able to make it pretty far in the interview process at a pretty big hedge fund down in Jacksonville, Florida. And I made it to the last round. It was three people left and I did not get picked. They ended up picking an MBA from Columbia who was an All-American swimmer. So me being at a small state school, I could not compete with that. So that really crushed my dreams, to be honest with you. And so I kind of gave up on the investment side of things and I decided to really just buckle down and focus on my corporate finance career. And so that's what I ended up doing. But that problem I had not being able to find a job is what led to my side hustles. And now I love what I do in the corporate finance world. I love my side hustles. And so it's really all worked out.
That's awesome, man. So you kind of had all these different avenues. First thing I want to ask, just out of curiosity, that must have been difficult to like have that pulled away from you, the riding motocross. I mean, because you did it for so long and just to just to say, okay, you can't do this anymore. Now you have to find something to invest all your time and passion into.
Yeah, you know, it's honestly probably one of the hardest things I've ever gone through to this point in my life is just, it was everything. It was my dad and I were super, super close. We did it every single weekend. We traveled the country. I've been to, I think in that one or two summers that we were racing the national circuit, I went to like 41 or 42 out of the 50 states. And it was just my whole life. So yeah, when that stopped, I was kind of shocked. And I wasn't old enough to fully understand everything that was going on and like really the repercussions of why I needed to do that. So yeah, it was really hard.
So when you got into the corporate space, you were like, all right, I'll make this work. At what point were you like, all right, yeah, this is interesting, but I think I need to find something else to spend my, you know, quote unquote, extra time doing. So when was that? And how did you get to that point where you were like, all right, there's something else, like for whatever reason, I need to be doing something else. Like when was that? And what was that reason?
So when I was coming out of undergrad, before I went into my MBA, I was applying to investment jobs. And I probably applied to, I think I looked on my LinkedIn and it was over 800 investment jobs. Now, granted, I did not put as much effort or background into those applications as I probably should have, now knowing what I know. But nonetheless, I had applied to a lot and I didn't get any traction at all. And so I decided to go into the corporate finance route. And I did that for about a year or two. And, you know, I liked it. I didn't, you know, I wasn't super passionate about it, but I liked it. But I just always in the back of my mind, I had something that I really wanted to go into investing. And so I continued to apply for jobs doing that. And like I said, I made it pretty far in one. And when that happened, it really kind of just was the last straw for me. But I wasn't ready to give up on my passion for investing. And so I tried to find ways that I could still get my passion out there for investing. And so what I found was that I could be a freelance writer about investing and get all of my thoughts. Essentially what I would do in an investment role, just do it myself as a side hustle, as a freelancer. And so that really led me to my first side hustle.
And so you were freelancing, doing writing on the finance topic. How were you, like, were you writing on your own personal blog? Were you like, how are you finding people that wanted you to write for them? What'd you do for that?
Yeah. So actually I got kind of lucky with that in that there's a platform called Seeking Alpha. Either you or maybe some of your listeners have heard of it, but they have a relatively easy process in terms of being able to become a freelancer for them, a writer. So I was able to make it through that. And then it gets a little harder when you submit articles. They're pretty strict about who they'll accept for art, like the actual article itself. But anybody can more or less have a chance at submitting the article. And so I had my first few articles really torn apart by the editors, but eventually we got to a point where it was good. I kind of knew what they were looking for. And from there, I was able to just write my articles for them. And then I did that for a while.
And what does something like that pay? Because I imagine like if you're going into that, you're spending a lot of time researching, you're spending a lot of time writing, they're asking for revisions, it sounds like. So is that, was that a lucrative side hustle or was that more like a passion project?
You know, it's funny, it's a little bit of both. So I'd say 95% of people would not go into that to make a lot of money. And I didn't go into it necessarily trying to make a lot of money. I was just really super passionate about it. And even though I had given up on going into an investment career, I think I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to write such a good piece one of these days that would lead to an investment job down the line. So I was really just trying to put everything I could into it. But so their payment structure is about $50 to $55 per article, which is good. But you know, when you're spending 8 to 10 hours or more on one article, it's not really that great or it's not really that lucrative. But actually what happened for me was I started to do the writing for them right when Bitcoin started to get super popular. And so the way their payment structure works is you're guaranteed a $50 stipend, but if you get enough views on that article that it goes over that, then you get paid per view. So it's whichever is more. And so I had just complete luck. I had written a Bitcoin article that had gone kind of viral and it had gotten over like, I want to say it was like almost 500,000 views. And so I ended up making a couple thousand dollars just from that one article. And that was the first one I ever wrote for them. And so I was like, oh my God, I got to write more of these. And so I ended up writing two more and they didn't do as well, but they did pretty well. And I think I ended up making, you know, $500 to $700 on each of those. So the first three articles netted me over like almost $5,000. from there, I started to write more about stocks, and that does not gain the interest. And because obviously we're making so much writing the Bitcoin articles, they start to flood in. But I was like one of the first people to write it. And so I kind of got lucky there. And then they really didn't pay out as well because so many people were pouring into it. So as I got into the stocks, it was about $50 an article. But they also have two other categories. So they have just their regular article, which is $50. Then they have a step up, which is called an editor's pick, which is like a middle of the road quality article with like a actionable idea. And those are about $100 to $130 an article. So those are a little bit better. And then they have what they call a top idea. And those pay $1,000 per article, but they don't pick very many of those. And so I think they pick one a month is what it is. And then the editor's pick is one a day. So it took me a while. I think it took 25 articles for me to get my first designation. So I was just getting those $50 payments. And then I went through a streak where I had 8 to 10 articles in a row that were either all editor's picks or all top ideas. And so it started to get a little more lucrative. But yeah, you definitely do it more as a passion than to get rich.
Nice. So are you still doing that now, or do you kind of leave that behind?
No, I kind of left that behind. And I'm sure we'll dive into that a little bit more. I still am passionate about it, but I found other things that I'm equally as passionate about, and I've kind of just gone to do other things.
Yeah. So what was the kind of the progression in your journey as far as your side hustle goes from there? And just to clarify real quick, you're still working your corporate finance job, correct?
Yeah. So I'm still rapidly climbing the corporate ladder. So I was working a $50,000 a year job coming out of college, and I've climbed the corporate ladder 3 times since then, and I'm doing significantly better than that still to this day. So
nice. That's awesome. So where, going back to your side hustle journey, where did you go from there? So you were writing the articles, and what, give us a time frame. When was this about, when you started and when you stopped?
So I was writing the articles probably back in 2016 and early 2017, mid 2017. Yeah, because I was right when I graduated college. I was at my first job, and I was trying to be as efficient as I could at my corporate job there, and so that I could spend some time at work writing my articles.
Yeah, I know what you mean on that one. Cool. So what was after that? What was after the, when you, did you see another shiny object? Like, where did you move from there?
Yeah, so I did that for a little while, and I just realized that was, so this was all before, like really entrepreneurship and like side hustles had really gotten super popular, right? So right now it's, you know, obviously it's the big craze. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. Everybody wants to have a side hustle, but this was like really at the very beginning of that. So I didn't have a ton to really study, and I just was like, you know, this actually works. Maybe I could do something on the side. And, you know, and I started to get more interested in some other things, and that evolved into one idea. And then I was like, oh, that works too. And then I had another idea and another idea and another idea. So it just kind of has spiraled. And now I have, you know, quite a few balls in the air.
Can you tell us a little bit about one of your favorite or most lucrative of those balls that you have in the air right now?
Yeah. You know, honestly, none of them have been super lucrative yet. They're long-term plays. I'm not really looking for short-term monetary gain. For me, it's really more long-term. So kind of the things I'm working on now, like I mentioned, I left the freelance writing behind. I do still do it from time to time if I have a really good idea. Before, I was kind of writing just as frequently as I could to get the extra side income. But now I really only do it if I have a good idea that I really want to write about. But the other things I'm working on is probably the biggest thing is my podcasts. And then also, the second biggest thing and probably my other biggest focus is my real estate investing. And so not a lot of people think of real estate investing as a side hustle, but I do currently. You know, I think it'll get to a point where it's not a side hustle anymore, but right now it is. And then I'm also working on building a real estate platform, software platform. So that's also a side hustle. And then in 2020, I have a goal to write a book. So those are really my four biggest side hustles that I'm working on right now.
Nice. So I know that recently I've had quite a few people that have real estate side hustles on the show. Some of those haven't even aired yet at this point. So that's pretty interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about like how did you kind of go down that path, and how did you kind of get your foot in the door with that?
Yes. So I think the real estate as a side hustle topic is really interesting. And I think my strategy is a little more interesting than a normal strategy, because it really is passive and it's a side hustle. It doesn't really impact my corporate career at all. But how I got into it was my whole career, like I mentioned, was really into stock investing. And I thought that that was my way to wealth. I thought that was exactly what I was going to do. And that's how I was going to make all of my money. Because I didn't think, like, I knew of real estate investing, but I didn't really know anything about it. And there's the stigma around it, right? That you need to have a lot of money to be a real estate investor. You have to be rich. And so I just assumed that that was the case. I was like, well, I'm not rich. I don't have a lot of money. I can't invest in real estate. I was 20 years old. And I did some studying. I found bigger pockets and I learned that that just was not the case. You know, there's a lot of strategies out there where you can get involved without having a lot of money. And so my parents, they've done a lot for me. But one of the things that my father told me is that when I graduated college and I was working full time, earning a salary, that I was going to have to start paying rent. And I was not happy with having to pay rent to my parents. And so I told myself that, and I knew this going into college. So I was able to, I worked almost full time all throughout my college career. And I bought a condo. So I bought my first house before I walked at my college graduation. And so I ended up house hacking that as my first property to get into real estate.
Nice. That's awesome. What is there anything in particular on Bigger Pockets? So this is a podcast for anybody interested in this idea of real estate investing. Probably one of the biggest real estate podcasts out there. Was there any like particular episode or anything that really kind of drew you in? Like, whoa, man, this is possible.
No, not really. I had done the condo. I had purchased my condo before I had ever heard of Bigger Pockets. I just kind of did it all on my own. And I was house hacking. I had a roommate before I had ever heard of Bigger Pockets. So I didn't even know it was house hacking. I was just trying to find a way to cover my mortgage. And then I found Bigger Pockets. And then I would hear them talk on the episodes about all of these people doing all these different things. And I'm like, these people are no different than me. You know, they can do it. I can do it. And I mean, that was really it. There really wasn't any one specific episode. It was just overall, I just heard a lot of people that were doing it and being successful. And I said, well, if they could do it, why can't I?
What have you done since the original condo purchase?
So I've done 6 deals so far in the last 2.5 years.
That's all like, is it certain like single family homes, multifamily? Like
it's a mix.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a mix. So I did another house hack. So That condo deal actually worked out really well for me. So I kind of knew what was going on, but it was more or less luck again. But basically it was in a condo association and I knew they were having a special assessment put on the units, which I knew that meant that there was a project coming. And so what happened was they ended up doing a $7 million renovation to the whole complex. And they used about $6 million from their savings that they've accrued over the last 30 years from the HOA fee that you pay in. And so each unit owner only had to pay about $10,000 to get about $60,000 to $65,000 worth of work done to their specific unit. So we got all new roofs, all new doors, all new windows, all new siding, everything got paved, new pool, everything like that. So the value of the condo went way up and I decided to sell and get out of that. And so I sold that and I rolled it into another house hack. And I currently live in a live-in flip / house hack. So it's a combination of the two. So I'm doing that now and eventually I'll move out of this property and rent it out. But other than that, I have 4 other properties that I've bought and sold as rental properties, mix of multifamily and single family.
Nice. So are you selling those other ones or are you renting them?
Renting them.
Okay, yeah, renting cool. Them. Nice. So what kind of cash flow does that get you on a monthly basis?
So what's interesting is I live in a really expensive market. I live just north of Boston. And so in this Boston market, it's pretty expensive. It's really hard to get cash flow. But that was really what I wanted. I didn't want to invest for appreciation. I didn't want to invest to speculate, right? So I wanted cash flow. And so I started to look into investing long distance. And so all of my properties, other than my house hack, have been in Texas, although I live in Boston. And so in the Midwest, you can get really good cash flow because the properties aren't as expensive and the rents are pretty strong. And so on, for example, we're averaging about $250 to $300 a month in net cash flow per door.
Nice. That's awesome. So without going too deep into this, like what's the explanation for when somebody's like, well, how do you get into real estate without putting up, you know, a ton of money, right? Having, you know, $200,000 saved up to buy this house. Like what's the quick and dirty version of how somebody gets into something like this without a ton of money up front?
Don't buy an expensive house. That's the simple example, right? One of the houses we bought in Texas, beautiful house, 3 beds, 2 bath, nice garage, pretty big yard, all fenced in, beautiful, great neighborhood. That's probably a $500,000 to $750,000 house where I live. in Texas, I bought it for $65,000. And so with 20% down on that, I mean, you're looking at anywhere between $12,000 to $15,000. And of course, that's a lot of money, but it's not $200,000 to put down on a big unit. So,
yeah. How are you finding your deals?
So that kind of leads into my other side hustle, my software platform that I'm building. And that's how I find the deals, is I originally was just using Excel file. And that's how I was aggregating demographic data for 7,000 cities across the US to try and find the best markets to invest in. And I thought that there had to be a better way. So I built the software platform with my business partner in that venture. And now we just use that to find the best markets to invest in. And then once we find the best markets, we talk to various agents who seem to know what they're talking about when it comes to investing. And then we work with them to find the best neighborhoods. And then we buy there.
Nice. So when you find that local agent, do you like split a commission with them or something like that? How's that work?
Yeah. So they'll earn their normal commission when they buy the house or sell the house. And so they'll get their normal commission there. And then they're really our boots on the ground. So what we do is we pay 50% of the first month's rent to the agent to help us get the tenant in the property.
Gotcha. So they become really critical in that process of do they help like screen the tenant and all that as well?
No, I actually do that myself. There's really good software platforms out there that the tenant or the potential applicant just applies and they spend like $25 or $30 and you get their background check, you get their credit, and then you have their full application. So there's software platforms that are completely free to the landlord and that does all of that. And I just tell him, the agent, I just ask him to do the showings and then I'll tell him who we've decided to put in and then they meet, do their move-in checklist, swap keys, do all of that. And then that's pretty much it.
Nice. So I want to dive into the podcast, but before we do that, regarding like the real estate investing, because I know this will sound interesting to a lot of different people out there, where would you point them besides Bigger Pockets? Or would you just say, hey, go listen to Bigger Pockets?
For education?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say probably Bigger Pockets is the best, but I'm actually launching a real estate show in the next 2 months. So if you're listening to this, when this comes out, check and see if the show is out yet. If it's not, it should be out in a month or two after that. So definitely check that out.
What's it going to be called? Do you know?
Yeah, it's just going to be called Real Estate Investing by the Investors Podcast Network.
Nice. Awesome. Cool, man. So I want to dive into your podcast. So you guys can't see this right now, but I have Robert here on the video in front of me and he's got a nice little logo on the boom arm of his mic. It's got his face on it. This is a pretty new podcast. It's called Millennial Investing or Investor.
Yeah, Millennial Investing.
Millennial Investing. So you've got all this stuff going on. You've got the real estate stuff. You've got your job. You've got the software program, all this stuff. Like, when and why did you want to start a podcast?
So this is kind of a funny story, but I always knew I wanted to start a podcast. And it was, again, one of those things where I saw other people doing it and they're having great success. So I said, why can't I do this, right? And so I started to look into it a little bit and I didn't have the time. So I never started one. And then I was listening to my favorite podcast. It's called We Study Billionaires. And it was the first podcast I had ever listened to. It was a stock investing podcast. And I heard the host say, we're looking to start new podcast. We're looking for hosts. But they were looking to start a show based on Silicon Valley. And they were really looking for somebody that lived in the Valley. And I was like, man, I would absolutely love to do that. But I don't live in the Valley and I don't know anything about Silicon Valley or tech. So that can't be me, right? And I remember I was driving to my corporate job and I was thinking to myself, man, I would really love that. And then I kind of forgot about it. A few months passed by and I ended up reaching out to the founder of the podcast. And I said, hey, I'm interested in writing. This goes back to what I was writing for articles. They write stock articles as well. And so I reached out to him. I said, hey, could I do some writing for you guys? And so that's how it started. I started to write a couple articles for them. And then I realized that they were looking to start a real estate podcast. And I said, oh my God, this is right up my alley. This is exactly what I want to do. And so I reached out to him and I asked if I could be the host of their new show for the real estate show. And then from there, we decided to start with the Millennial Investing show before we went into the real estate, just to kind of, you know, get our feet wet, see what it was like to launch a second show. And so we started with Millennial Investing. We started working on that back in May and we launched in August.
Nice. What kind of stuff do you guys talk about?
So on the Millennial Investing show, the goal of the show is to help anybody invest their time and money better. Essentially, anybody from the age of 22 to 40 is really our target range. And so, yeah, just anybody that wants to invest their time or money better. And so that includes, it does include stock investing, of course, but it also includes a little bit of real estate. It includes just entrepreneurship, startups, side hustles. And we even talk about personal finance and career development as well.
That's awesome, man. Cool stuff. How did you guys put it out to the world? How did you guys launch it? Did you leverage like their other platform, the We Study Billionaires, to help, you know, let people know about this new one?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you're seeing a lot of the popular shows or networks right now leverage their brand to launch new shows. And so that's exactly what they wanted to do. They're the number one stock investing podcast in the world. They had done over 30 million downloads as of the time that I started reaching out to them. And so they had a really strong brand name and they wanted to leverage that. So essentially what we did was we leveraged their brand name. We had me on there for a small snippet during one of their episodes, and we just mentioned that a new show is starting. And that's really how we advertised it.
Nice. How's things been going with the podcast?
It's going really well so far. It's grown. I think it's done a little bit better than we had expected from the beginning. So it's really good. We've been able to get some really great guests on, and it's going really well.
That's super cool, man. Congrats on that. How has it been, like, you as a content creator? Like, is it a new platform for you? So has it been difficult to interview people and create content? Like, how's that been?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And at first it was absolutely horrible. It was so hard. It was very hard for me. I was so out of my realm, and just everything that went into it, I really wasn't that great at it. And so you could hear, if you go back and listen to the first two or three episodes, you could definitely hear how I was talking then versus how I might talk on new episodes now. And we're only, I think we've released 13 or 14 episodes, so we're not super far into it, right? But just even over that time frame, I've gotten a lot better at it. And it was very hard at first, and you just kind of keep doing it and keep doing it, and eventually it gets easier.
Nice. So what's your long-term goal with the podcast? Is it anything in mind? Like, I mean, you said you want to write a book. So will it help like support the book, or is it just like, hey, let's just put out content and see where this goes?
Yeah. Well, I think my goal with the show is really just help as many people as I can in the millennial generation. You know, we have a stigma around us that we're not going to be successful with our finances. And I really want to help people as much as I can with that. You know, I want to be the resource that I wish I had when I was, you know, getting started. I was lucky to have a few different things that really helped me. So I really want to be that resource to people. But long-term for the vision, it's just kind of really see where it goes. Eventually I do. So I actually have two book ideas I want to write, one for millennial investing, one for the real estate show. And I'm going to focus more on the real estate book first. But eventually, once I have a backlog for millennial investing, once it's been out for a while, I want to write like a Tony Robbins style book, you know, where he interviews a ton of different successful people and kind of puts that together and just aggregates it in a book like he's done. And so I want to do something similar with my podcast of millennial investing. I want to take some of the best people I've talked to, some of their best ideas, put it into a book and, you know, sell that for the millennial show. But my focus on the real estate show is more, the book for the real estate show is more of my focus first.
Gotcha. So one of the things that people for sure will be thinking as they listen to this is, man, you've got a lot of things going on. You got a lot of balls in the air right now. You know, how do you manage your time, like on a day-to-day basis? Like, you've got your day job, you got to drive to work, you have to do that for X amount of time while you're there. You've got all these other projects that you have to pivot back and forth between. Like, how do you manage to like wrap your hands around all that and keep everything moving forward without it just like crumbling around you?
Yeah. And on top of that, I also work out 4 days a week, and I actually recently got back into racing. So I'm doing that again. And I have a family as well. So definitely a lot of things on my plate, and I'm probably one of the busiest people I know, but I love it. I just, that's what gets me through it, really. I'm super passionate about everything I work on. If I'm not passionate about it, I won't work on it because I know I won't make time for it. I won't put in the quality work that I need to. So I'm just super passionate about everything I do. And I schedule everything. And I think that's one of the biggest things I've learned from talking to some of the most successful people in business is that they schedule their days, and I schedule everything. Everything I have has a time slot in my day. And so I know exactly what needs to be done every day. I'm super organized about it. And that's really, I think, the biggest thing is I have a lot of things on my plate, but there are a lot of things that are also not due for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And so I have a nice Trello board that's scheduled out, and I use that tool all the time, and it really keeps me organized. And that's really what keeps me being able to do so many different things.
Can you dive into that a little bit more? So are you scheduling this out in Trello, or are you scheduling this out in your calendar?
Both. So I put like my events and everything in my calendar, but Trello really keeps my tasks organized and scheduled. And what I really like about Trello is they have features where you can schedule the card, so you get a notification when things are due. And so I have everything I need to work on all in Trello boards. And so if it's not due in the next couple of days, I'm not worried about it at this point. I'll worry about it when I get there. And so I get notifications saying, all right, in the next day, you have these items due. In the next 2 days, you have these items due. And it's super helpful for me. But other than that, with the scheduling in my calendar, I schedule everything. So if I don't have meetings, I'll schedule time with myself. I'll schedule time with my family, schedule time to go to the gym. And the other really big thing for me is I have a long commute. I commute about an hour each way to my corporate job. And I make the best use of my time in the car. I think my car is a mobile classroom, and I think that is probably one of the biggest things has led to some of the success that I've had is how I use that time. I spend upwards of 2 hours or more every day in my car. And so because of that, I read almost 50 books a year. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I'm just able to gain a lot of knowledge from doing that. And I hold a lot of meetings during that time. So if I know I'm going to the gym in the morning, or if I know I'm going to work, or when I'm driving home, I schedule a lot of meetings during that time. And you know, on an hour commute home, I'm able to get 2, maybe 3 meetings done, or listen to an audiobook or a podcast. And all of that really helps.
How do you, a little bit of a personal question, how do you manage like your relationships, like with your family, like with all this stuff going on? Because I know just from like personal experience, like so I just quit my corporate job a few months back. And I know when I was doing both things, you know, I was, you know, sitting at a coffee shop, you know, a couple miles down the road from my job at like 5 o'clock in the morning, trying to get some things done, and, you know, coming home late, having to hop on the computer and not really getting to spend a lot of time with my wife. So how do you manage that stuff?
It's funny to hear you say that, because that's exactly what I do. You know, I do the exact same thing. I work in the mornings before I actually go to work. I also spend I don't always take lunch, but if I do take lunch, if I have something I really need to work on, I'll spend my lunch working on my side hustles. But what I do to manage my family relationships is I really try to utilize the time when they're asleep. You know, for my immediate family, that's what I do, is I wake up at 4:30, 5 o'clock every single day, and they don't, you know, so I have an hour or 2 hours before they wake up, and I'm gone for work before they even wake up. So I am able to get some time in there. And then when I come home, I'm home. I make sure I leave work. I don't work late most days. I try to commit to that, and so that I come home and I can have 2 hours, 3 hours with them before they go to bed when I get home from work. And that time I don't do anything work related. That's strictly scheduled and spent time working with them or hanging out with them. And then when they go to bed, sometimes I'll open up my laptop and I'll do work again. But I don't do that 5 days a week either. So, you know, I do sacrifice some of my family time for work, and I recognize that. And there is probably times where I should spend more time with my family than I do, but everything I do is essentially for them. And so hopefully someday we can have more time to all spend together. So what I try and do is, you know, we have 7 days in a week. And so I try and schedule 2, 3 days where I can do just work. I come home from work, I hang out with them for an hour or 2 hours, we have dinner, all of that. Then I really dive into my work. But the rest of the days, I don't touch any of my work. So I really try and just schedule it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Where do you see yourself, you know, 6 months from now? What do you see happening? Where do you see your side hustles? Is your long-term vision to continue working your day job for the foreseeable future? Or do you have some like grand plan outside of that?
I don't really have a grand plan, honestly. I really do love my corporate job. My first corporate job out of college, it was okay. You know, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't that great. I moved on from there. I got another job that was okay. I kind of liked it, but I wasn't super passionate about it. But the new job I have now, I've been in it about 6 months, and I really do like it, and I don't see myself leaving it anytime soon. So, you know, I'm just kind of taking it where things go, and we'll see where it leads. But for now, I don't really have an end goal.
That's awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate you coming on here, sharing about all the things you've done. Just to kind of let people catch up with you after the show here, where can they learn more about you, the podcast, and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, the best place to find the current podcast, Millennial Investing, you could just search Millennial Investing on Apple Podcasts or really anywhere that you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google, it's everywhere. We also will be launching the Real Estate Show. That'll be coming up in early 2020, so you can check that out as well if you're interested in real estate. The best place to connect with me personally is probably through Instagram, Robert at TIP, so that's spelled Robert, A-T-T-I-P. Or you could just shoot me an email at robert@theinvestorspodcast.com. Happy to talk to anyone.
That's awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on here again. For us right now, it's a Saturday. So thanks for spending your Saturday. Obviously, with everything you've told us, you have plenty of other things that you could be doing right now. So I want to say I appreciate your time, and I look forward to everybody hearing this podcast and, you know, getting some inspiration to go find some time in their day, because we know it's there. Find that time and make use of it and do some awesome things like you are. So I appreciate your time, Robert.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me. Thanks.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.